You know, ladies and gentlemen, this is a country with a short memory anyway. And a sub-example of that would be our fine public broadcasting apparatus. We don't really remember the pledges of yesteryear and what milked them out of you with a great deal of fidelity. You know, they did their job, they're gone. They milked, you gave, onward. So, you know, you're not going to find a lot of people in, let's say, public television right now who will even admit that John Tesh ever visited Red Rocks, let alone felt that he needed more rocks there. So they had to put in some artificial rocks because the actual rocks at Red Rocks weren't enough. But you won't find people in public television who will even cop to the existence of that special at this point in time. You know, they got the three tenors. What do they need with Red Rocks? And so it is in public radio. I don't think very many people, maybe until this weekend, stopped to remember that back in the old days, back when Susan Stamberg wasn't a special correspondent, the one of the major fundraising devices for this operation was a program imported from Britain called The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Kind of clever, kind of sci-fi, well-produced, because it was from the Beeb. And, you know, if you want to know the difference between Britain and America, at least in those days, they produced that. NPR turned around and produced a radio version of Star Wars to try to raise money. But it was The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, I think, that won the day. Anyway, Douglas Adams, an acquaintance, died of a heart attack suddenly this weekend. A lot of people have thanked him for a lot of things, but on behalf of public radio, thanks for the pledges. Hello, welcome to the show.
She's the worst person that I know. Susie was the queen of little red, white, and blue. Said, ooh, why, get your spy, boy. Prepare yourself to die, boy. Medicine man got heat strong power. You know better than to mess with me. Like a rival, la 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 la, Bruce. Like a rival, la 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 la, Bruce. If you see a spy boy sitting in the bush, mess him on his head, give him a push. Get out the dishes, get out the pan. Ooh, he fast for the medicine man. Queen is coming, by me. Queen is coming to West Paso Way. Better not get in the way. Got the second line fever today. Sang a wham, bam, hang the hand. Come on down, boy, and follow me. Wham, bam, thank you, man. Come on, boy, and follow me. Mama Ruth. She was the queen of the little, little white and blue. Mama Ruth. She was the queen of the little, red, white and blue. Come on, boy, now follow me. Wham, bam, hang the hand. Come on, boy, now follow me. And wham, bam, spray and sand. Come on, boy, now follow me.
Well, stop, great God, let me tell you the news. My head got wet in the midnight dew. I've been down on my bended knees, talking to the man from Galilee. Then my God spoke, and he sounded so sweet. I thought I heard the shuffle of angels' feet. Then he put one hand upon my head. Great God, the mighty, let me tell you what he said.
Don't tell that long-tongued liar.
So some people go to church just to signify, trying to get a date with the neighbor's wife. But listen to me, brother, sure as you're born, you better leave that woman alone. Because one of these days, you mark my word, you think that brother is going to work. You're gonna come up and knock on the door. That's all, brother, you knock no more. You may run on for a long time. Stop, great God, let me tell you the news. My head got wet in the midnight dew. I've been down on my bending knee, talking to the man from Galilee. Lord, he spoke so sweet. I thought I heard the shuffle of angels' feet. He placed one hand upon my head. Great God, I'm out of, let me tell you what he said.
Don't tell that long-tongued liar. Go tell that.
Long time.
Run long for a long time. Run long for a long time.
Well, hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the show from the edge of America, once more, from the home of the homeless, from the original and unduplicated Le Show Dome. I'm Harry Shearer, and I'm here to answer the question, first of all, is it possible to have tennis elbow without ever playing tennis? The answer is yes, because I have it. Is it possible to have tennis elbow without having an elbow? I don't know, because I am elbowed. I am bi-elbowed, as a matter of fact. But yeah, look at this, right here. See? I have this thing on my arm because I have tennis elbow without ever having played a game of tennis. Isn't that wacky? I haven't even watched tennis. I don't have tennis viewer's elbow, even. But there you go. No, there I go. First of all, ladies and gentlemen, well, first of all, guy is 14 minutes into the broadcast and he has the nerve to say, first of all, you know, people in the business in which I toil, show business, and you can't really call it toil, can you? No, you can't, but you know what I mean. Anyway, people in this business love, and people in the media generally, executives, you know what I'm talking about. They used to call them the suits before they stopped wearing suits. Now what do you call them? I don't know. The Levi's. Anyway, they love, part of their education, and you know, we have the best educated media executives now in the world. Shows you the limits of education. They love to quote H.L. Mencken, the cynic literateur in the 20s, back in the 20s, who said, quote, "Nobody ever went broke underestimating the intelligence of the American public," unquote. It's the least true thing H.L. Mencken ever said. Where are the guys who put $50 million into the Super Mario Brothers movie? What did they get? I'm not even going to mention Joe Dirt, but let's talk for a moment about the XFL, the Extreme Football League, into which NBC and the World Wrestling Federation pumped $100 million, ladies and gentlemen. And it's gone. I don't even think there are enough. I don't even think they can make the money back on collectible XFL souvenirs on eBay. Although that would be the best bet at this point. That would be the new producers now. You know, to form a company with the distinct and deliberate idea of going broke, so that the collectibles you made for that company can become incredibly valuable on eBay. But I don't think that was the XFL's plan. The XFL's plan was to be in business for a while and to target young males on Saturday night. That was the goal. Get young guys to watch TV on Saturday night. Watch bloody, violent football with a lot of scantily clad cheerleaders along for the ride. The cheerleaders weren't so scantily clad because they were playing football outdoors in mainly February and March. And I guess they figured out that goose flesh ain't that sexy. And then there was the football. I don't know anything about football, and I don't like football, which is why I don't know anything about football. Well, I know I don't like it. I know that. But those who know about football say it wasn't very good football, despite where our heart was. Now, listen to the quotes from these guys and tell me who they've been reading. From Vince McMahon, the head of World Wrestling Federation. "Despite where our heart was, we just couldn't make it work from a financial standpoint. This was a thing of the heart. This was an affair of the heart, an affair de coeur. Quote, we tried to figure out every conceivable way to make this work. We came up with different combinations and permutations to try to make it work. 6 hours ago, we came to the conclusion that it would not work. That was when NBC said, no way we're having this on Saturday night again. And UPN, even less than Fox and Network, said, no way we're having that on Sunday night. So, from the heart, they wanted, from the heart, they, Vince tried to make it work. The heart, you see, ladies and gentlemen. Said a media buyer, who purchases commercials on sports broadcasts, it was just too much of a loser. There was no reason for advertisers to buy on this league. It was a nothing. Dick Ebersol, chairman of NBC. NBC Sports needs a chairman, ladies and gentlemen. A president is not enough. It needs to be chaired. He said he knew on the Sunday morning of the NBA All-Star Game, the XFL's second weekend of play, that the league was in trouble. When I saw the ratings for the second game, I had an inkling that the public had voted and not for the XFL. He blames the lack of time to get the players prepared. NBC loses $50 million on the deal. World Wrestling Federation loses $35 million. But add to Vince McMahon's quote about the heart, Dick Ebersol's quote. Life is cyclical. About every 10 years you hit a bump in the road. Life is also about risk and opportunity. We took the risk, and it didn't work out. When things don't work, it doesn't mean you stop taking risks. The risk, ladies and gentlemen, was betting that people would buy substandard football and cheesier-than-ever cheerleaders. That was the risk. That was the heart deal. See, these guys, they love to talk like artists. But just remember, somebody has just gone broke underestimating the intelligence of the American public. Call Mr. Mencken's handlers and tell them that. Because they'll forget it again. It'll be forgotten very soon. The point being, of course, that quote is used to justify stooping ever lower, even though it fails time and again. But, you reach a little high and lose 1/14th of what these guys just blew, and everybody wags their finger and quotes Mencken at you. So, let this be an object lesson. Let the XFL hang over the heads of people who try to reach lower next time, won't you? Thank you very much. All right, let's go to... Let's go to news of current and former occupants of the White House, won't we? President Bush, as you know, has been making some appointments. I mean, naming some people to high office. This week, he named a person to head the Securities and Exchange Commission. And the first story that came out about this nominee was that he had been very instrumental and vocal in helping his clients avoid regulation by the SEC. And there was a bit of chuckling about that irony. But here's the real irony. Harvey Pitt was hired by New Frontier Media in 1999, just a couple of years ago, to do legal work in an effort to help the company keep listed on the NASDAQ. New Frontier Media is an online distributor of teen sex videos. That's the guy who helped them is President Bush's nominee to head the SEC. Pitt did not respond to repeated requests for comment on Friday. The White House stood behind his nomination. New Frontier Media, which bills itself as America's most turned-on media company, runs several satellite and cable channels which show adult movies. It also runs iGallery.com, a network of sexually explicit websites offering teen sex videos, live nude amateurs, and the like. That'll be running on NBC next Saturday. No, sorry. Religious conservatives are questioning Pitt's nomination. Quote, if he's made money on the degradation of women and children, he is not acceptable to become the chairman of the Securities and Exchange Commission, says Lou Sheldon, chairman of the Traditional Values Coalition. To reward that behavior with that appointment is not good political judgment. Former GOP presidential candidate Gary Bauer, remember him, the shortest man at the debates? He said Bush should take a second look at the nomination. The Bush administration is in office because of millions of votes from Americans worried about cultural decline, Bauer said. If Mr. Pitt has provided assistance to a company that distributes pornography, it would be deeply insulting to those voters. Hank Grassen, New Frontier Media's main lawyer, said he asked for Pitt's help with the NASDAQ problem because Harvey's the best of the best. When people get in trouble, he's the first guy to call. No, OJ didn't know that. All right, that's the current... Oh, no, more one more item about the current occupant of the White House. Apropos of Christians. Nationwide prayer has been urged to protect George W. Bush from the zero-year curse on the White House. Intercession leaders are calling for reaffirming warfare prayer over the supernatural link they believe was behind the death in office of seven presidents elected in a year with zero at the end. The curse was finally broken, they say, after widespread prayer with the 1980 election of Ronald Reagan, who survived an assassination attempt. Before Reagan took office, every president elected in the zero years from 1840 on had died while president. Says Gary Burgle, president of Intercessors for America. See, they don't need a chairman. President is enough for them. It's important that Christians reaffirm the cancellation and breaking of the curse. He wrote in a letter to supporters that warfare prayer was needed to cancel the prophetic predictions being made by various astrologers and occult oracles that the 2000 elect must die because of zodiac conjunctions and numerological calculations purportedly showing ominous vectors for the new president. Burgle, he said, he found a dual system of death decrees involving the White House. The first was placed by Native American chiefs and medicine men in retaliation for the confiscation of land, massacres, and breaking of treaties. Tenskwatawa, the brother of Shawnee chief Tecumseh, recognized as a prophet, was said to have placed a death curse upon General William Harrison after being defeated at the Battle of Tippecanoe. Burgle said Native American lore recorded that Harrison would be chosen as the great white chief, according to the prophet, but he would die in office, and after him, every great white chief chosen every 20 years thereafter would die. Harrison became president in 1840 and died the following year of pneumonia. Burgle, again, president of Intercessors for America, in lieu of a chairman, said the White House had also been affected by seances conducted by First Lady Mary Todd Lincoln. He said prayer was also needed for more recent occult occurrences and practices at the White House, such as Nancy Reagan's reported use of astrology. They have to pray to clear the place of what Nancy Reagan did. And First Lady Hillary Clinton's receiving the laying on of hands from a Native American shaman. Not Mark Shaman. Burgle said the curse had been broken in 1980, but it had to be reaffirmed now because Satan, I'm quoting, would desire to use these new speculations to undermine faith and promote fear and superstition and to draft false prophecy by which he might inspire and prompt possible revengeful acts of violence. His call was echoed by Charles Caron, an evangelist and writer who has researched the White House curse. We must continue to pray, he says. We cannot assume it's done and gone back, and we cannot assume it's done and go back to sleep. It was a sleeping church that caused the curse to prevail that long anyway, he concluded. So I don't know. Do you blame Satan? Do you blame the Indians? Do you blame a sleeping church? When it's a curse you're dealing with, ladies and gentlemen, I say blame everybody. Blame Dick Ebersol while you're at it. And finally, on the subject of a recent president, Tony Blair, the Prime Minister of Britain, is considering whether his old friend Bill Clinton should receive an honorary knighthood. Blair is concerned, supposedly, that such an award could harm relations with President Bush, even though knighthoods for former U.S. presidents have become a modern tradition. Ronald Reagan and George Bush pair were honored after they left office. A Democratic Party source says Clinton frequently telephones Blair even though he's no longer in the White House. Clinton usually makes the call, and they chat about all sorts of things. They're still third-way buddies. A Labor insider said it would be utterly amazing and inconceivable for Clinton to be snubbed by not receiving a knighthood. Since Tony Blair's visit to Washington in February, Clinton has given Blair advice about how to maximize an expected victory in next month's election and avoid the mistakes Al Gore made during last year's presidential campaign. I wonder what those would be. Don't be a loser. Be the step one. The telephone calls, 5 telephone calls between Mr. Bush and Mr. Blair have been described by British officials as all good constructive stuff. So, Sir Bill Clinton, ladies and gentlemen, did you ever think you'd live to see the day?
Never liked nobody that's been mean to me. I've got a heart full of stone, and I hate the misery. Then you came along into my life, destroying me more, mounting up the toil and strife. But I'm a fool for you. I'm a fool. It's a doggone shame, knowing you don't love me. You go on and use me so continuously. I don't know why I love you like I do, when you're breaking my heart and you know it's true. But I'm a fool. Child, I'm here to stay, 'cause I'm a fool for you. You don't want me to stay, but I'm a fool. Child, I'm a fool for you. Oh, 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 oh. I'm a fool for you. Oh, 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 oh. Child, I'm a fool for you. Ooh, 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 ooh. I'm a fool for you. Oh, 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 oh,
oh. And speaking of fools, you're listening to the show, but speaking of fools, let's talk about digital television. Yeah, that's the segue of the day. Ladies and gentlemen, the digital wonderland opens its arms to you. Forget about America for a moment. What about Australia? Glad you asked. According to Australia Consumer Association's technology policy officer, the government has no plans to close the digital television divide when their deadline, 2008, comes. And the analog TV is turned off. There's no government plan to provide free decoders for low-income people whose TVs will effectively be rendered useless. There's nothing in the pipeline at present, he said. Britain claims a large percentage of the Australian population will be not ready for the changeover from analog to digital by 2008. A commission has submitted a proposal to the government to provide set-top boxes in anticipation of that conversion, but the government has knocked back the proposal. See if this sounds familiar. There seems to be no plan. The whole analog switch-off hasn't been planned well. They seem to have plucked a date out of the air, says Britain. He believes the public won't take kindly to being told to buy a new TV in 2008 or even later. Consumers may stay away from purchasing digital set-top boxes or TVs altogether, he says. Doesn't that sound like... See, we're all the same, really, when you try to take our TV away from us. Okay, some other notes on the digital television wonderland. Says the marketing director of Mitsubishi, they make TVs, ladies and gentlemen. Bob Perry, he told a group of CBS engineers during a recent convention, due to the lack of laws requiring cable systems to carry all digital signals, we could give a free digital TV to every household in America, and only 30% would be able to watch it. Of course, they're not going to give the free TV. What is this, Australia? But if they did, only 30% would be able to watch anything digital on it, because they can't get reception over the air. We've heard about those problems before. And cable won't carry digital channels, because there's too many of them, if they ever turned any of them on. The CBS engineers at that broadcasting convention do seem a little like they're looking at a big uphill incline, to be redundant and repetitious. Stations should promote high-definition television as a unique service, said the CBS engineers, getting a standard, not a high-def, just a regular, like we have now, but except it's digital, signal on the air, according to the CBS engineers, is challenging enough. So spend thousands of dollars to get another TV that gets pictures almost as good as the ones you're getting now, because that's the challenge now. And regarding statistics that you may read about digital television, don't be fooled, ladies and gentlemen. For example, first quarter of this year, so-called DTV, digital television product sales, totaled 234,000. Those are TVs, but most of them don't have tuners. Of the almost 650,000 sets sold since digital television rolled out, only 27,000 have tuners in them. Most people are buying digital TVs to watch DVDs, not to watch digital television. So, what are you waiting for? And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for me to read the trades for you. From Advertising Age, the Bible of the advertising industry, GM rethinks the merits of ad pretesting. Uh-oh, I better read this for you. General Motors Corporation is studying whether to revamp its ad pretesting process. Creative executives at GM's ad agencies, who asked not to be named, said the process hamstrings their executions. GM tested a pair of commercials for Volkswagen under GM's pretesting system. The VW commercials, already on the air, flunked GM's process. John Middlebrook, Vice President General Manager of GM's Brand Merchandising and Advertising, said the custom-designed ad testing system from Diagnostic Research International, or DRI, of Los Angeles, is one gate we go through in advertising development. Consumers are shown the storyboards, which he said keeps you from doing bad stuff. Christopher C.J. Frawley is studying the DRI process because he says we need to get great advertising. Across the board, our Cadillac work isn't where we want it to be. That's according to Kim Kosak, ad director of Cadillac. Well, she should know. GM started the DRI pretesting of ads under Mr. Frawley's predecessor in the mid-1990s. But pretesting among other automakers is a mixed bag. Mercury does some pretesting of ads to ensure commercials meet objectives. Volkswagen doesn't. If we want to say who we are, we need to be risky, says Frank McGuire, VP at Volkswagen, VP at VW. Says Mark Hans Rischer, ad director at GM, just because you test something doesn't make it bad.
What?
The VP at VW cited Volkswagen's 1997 Da 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 Golf commercial, which some at VW didn't want produced. Oh, look who's picking up that inane phrase, it's all good. Buick. That line will appear in all Buick ads, replacing, isn't it time for a real car? It's all good. So, to test or not to test, it's an important question. Revealed in all its strangeness, ladies and gentlemen, when I read the trades for you. It's a copyrighted feature. Now, as you know, the scheduled execution of Timothy McVeigh has been delayed by reports that the FBI mislaid, sequestered, lost, put aside, withheld. You choose the verb. Hey, let's play You Choose the Verb. 3,000 pages of evidence, which is either material or immaterial to Timothy McVeigh's guilt and or sentence. So Attorney General John Ashcroft Friday declared at least a one-month delay in the execution by lethal injection of Timothy McVeigh. Of course, there was a big advance preparation festival going on in Terre Haute, Indiana. The media vans were already there for an event that they couldn't televise, but they could televise around. They could televise the building where it was going to happen. And in addition, perhaps you didn't know this, whenever Timothy McVeigh goes to the execution, he will go with a trumpet fanfare written especially for him, ringing in his ears. The fanfare is the closing section of a musical prequiem, or pre-funeral tribute, to McVeigh called Ave Atque Vale, Onward Valiant Soldier, that its composer plans to play for McVeigh at a vigil to be broadcast over a radio station on the day of execution. David Woodard, an L.A. composer, hey, we're proud as punch to have him among us here in the creative community, said this week the 12.5-minute piece is intended to bring comfort to the man guilty of the worst act of terrorism ever committed on American soil. Woodard draws parallels with Jesus Christ, who he says, like McVeigh, was 33 and nearly universally despised at the time of his execution. I think it will resonate with him. I think it will lift his spirits. My intention is to provide comfort to Tim McVeigh. Woodard is a soft-spoken musician who disagrees with McVeigh's horrible crime, says he finds himself awed by who he is and his circumstances. The composer has gone to extraordinary lengths to get his melancholy composition performed in public and heard by McVeigh, refused permission by prison officials to perform the piece inside the jail at Terre Haute. Woodard will instead conduct the prequiem, during a vigil at a nearby Catholic church. Acting on advice by letter from McVeigh, Woodard has asked an Indiana University student radio station that McVeigh listens to broadcast the performance. It may also be picked up by TV stations. McVeigh has access to radio and TV until 1 hour before his execution. I think it is worth my efforts to do something in his behalf because he is such an unusual person, says Woodard. The way in which he has managed himself after the bombing is unfathomably mindful and composed, and I feel he deserves some sort of tribute. He also calls him an amazing, albeit misguided, talent. He's written and performed several requiems and prequiems, which are intended to be performed for a person while that person is dying. Everyone I've mentioned it to has tried to dissuade me, he says, and told me it will be misinterpreted and will only bring me trouble. But this piece is not related to the crime. It is related to this person who did that horrible deed and his circumstances as they are now. Unquote. David Woodard. Interestingly enough, another composer here in Los Angeles has gone to amazing lengths to get what he calls a prequel, which is the combination of a prayer and a dose of NyQuil or DayQuil to be played on the radio in a place where Timothy McVeigh probably can't hear it.
30 more days for your lawyers to stall, for you to converse with Gore Vidal. 30 more days for the TV crews to wait while you prepare to meet your fate. 1 month to live and it sounds so sweet. 1 month more of prison meals to eat. Free cable TV, oh say can you see? 1 month to live. Collateral damage in your lack of tact. 30 more days to say folks had to die to pay for screw-ups by the FBI. 1 month to live and maybe much more. A primetime line just to spread the lore. And some cable TV, thank you, Louis Free. 1 month to live. Thirty more days to spread the word, to say children should be buried in debris and not heard. 30 more days for the show to grow old, while your needle is put. 1 month to live and it's all the same. Killing for revenge is the name of the game. Free cable TV, oh say can you see? 1 month to live.
Hello, Camp David.
Hey, 43, haven't you... haven't you learned the code words yet?
41, good to talk to you. Well, of course I have.
Well, you said Camp David.
Yeah, but I'm really at the ranch, so...
Okay, well, didn't know.
Yeah.
Just speed dialed yourself.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, called because, yeah, a little bit worried about you.
Are you kidding me?
Well...
I'm on a roll. We passed our budget with our tax cut in it. We're going ahead with our missile defense thingy, and even though we don't pay attention to the polls in this White House, my numbers are higher than Clinton's.
Well, know all that. Still read the papers, you know. But just wondering, and not to sound like your mother here, but... haven't heard from you lately.
Oh, listen, 41, I haven't been this touch since you tried to expunge my Tarrant County arrest record. I'm just relying more and more on Dick Cheney. Heck of a fine man, you know.
Yeah.
He's a real master of all jacks.
Look, let me tell you, nobody appreciates the idea of a vice president you can lean on more than old 41 here because...
Oh, because you didn't have one.
Oh, whatever. But, son, hate to say it, but I worry about you.
Well, look, it's just that I'm the CEO in this organization. Dick Cheney's my COO.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if he doesn't schedule me for a call to you, you know, the day gets away from me. The next thing you know, it's 6:30 in the evening and it's zonk-out time.
Yeah, you're using those pills the doctor prescribed for you?
No, I don't need them. This job makes me sleep like a baby.
Yeah, the nonstop pressure, the weight of the world.
Just the briefings. Anybody who can stay awake through those, you know, should go to Harvard.
So, okay, you got your budget passed, and you put down your marker for missile defense.
Well, don't make that sound like nothing, 41. You know, nobody thought we'd get those done. You know, I was supposed to be the president so worried about my legitimacy that I'd be driven to the center. Well,
yeah.
Guess what? Not.
Well, you never let doubts about your legitimacy stand in your way.
Should I?
Well, of course not. You know, just saying.
Okay, because if there's something you haven't told me...
Hey, look at us. Listen to us. We're the father and son DNA poster boys, for goodness sake.
Yeah. You know, Dick figured out this most excellent strategy, which we used on China. We used it on the environment. You know, he comes out and gives a real red meat speech, something to get the Christian coalition folks all jacked up. And then I come along and, you know, tone it all back down again.
Mm-hmm.
Democrats can't figure out, you know, what's who and who's what.
Yeah.
You can just imagine the look on Tom Daschle's mind's eyes face.
No, that's all to the good.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
A little concerned about this energy situation, though. High gas prices, high electricity prices. Sounds like the kind of thing that sent Jimmy Carter and his sweaters back to peanut country.
Oh, well, here again, we had Dick Cheney stink out the hard-nosed position that more drilling and more refining were the only way to go. And then, you know, I step up and talk about what you might call the soft power plants of energy efficiency.
Yeah, well, you know, you get on the wrong side of
it. Oh, look, you know, I even came out in support of conversation as part of our energy policy, you know. And I mean, it beats the hell out of me how conversation is going to free up any energy. But
I think that's conservation.
Maybe it's a typo.
Yeah.
Anyway, with an olive jar in the direction of the Enviros, which, you know, Dick thinks is really all we need. I mean, we're not going to win California next time around,
yeah.
Even if Schwarzenegger runs and wins the governorship.
Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, you're not supposed to say the other thing anymore, right?
Oh, that's right. Good point. But now, you just remember,
yeah.
You sell drilling in the Arctic as the solution to high gas prices, and then the prices don't go down, but there are pictures in the evening news of oil-soaked caribou, and you, my young son, are in the deepest kind of doo-doo.
Well, now see, we're tweaking all that as we speak. I mean, well, Dick's tweaking while I'm speaking, but we're now selling the tax cut as a way to give people the money to pay for higher gas prices.
And the drilling in the Arctic?
We're positioning that as the only way to get the Eskimos off of welfare.
It's pretty good.
Now, I'm telling you, if Dick stays on his friggin' exercise machine and lays off the Krispy Kremes, we got it made.
Okay.
So Now listen, 41, don't worry.
Yeah.
You know, unless you're a Democrat.
All right.
All right, you give my love to Barbara.
Hey, mine to Laura.
I guess it's Happy Mamacita's Day, ladies and gentlemen, judging by the way we open and close the broadcast. Anyway, that is going to do it for this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USEN 4440 cable system in Japan. I know I have at least one listener to that thing. He sent me, he's briefed me. USEN's big. They're doing broadband internet for so much cheaper than the regular phone company in Japan. I'm tempted to say, come on over here, USEN. Anyway, over around the world through the Armed Forces Network on shortwave at WBCQ, the planet at 7.415 megahertz. They're not leaving shortwave. They're not like the BBC. And on your computer, I'm proud to announce, whenever you want it, back at the old stand at www.harryshearer.com. And, you know, it'd be just like not pretesting anything, and if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? You know, from the heart. Just do it from the heart, like Vince McMahon. Would you do that? All righty, thank you very much. Uh-huh. Be like the chairman. Take some risks. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions. It originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.